start talking to somebody that you never met before, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh my goodness, we have so many things in common. That's exactly what's going to happen today with James Schlosser. Now, we don't have much in common in terms of what we do, right? He's in sales, he deals with roofing. That's something that I don't know anything about. But what we do bond on is complacency, burnout, and how to get yourself out of it. So sit back and enjoy our conversation with James Schlosser on Learn From People Who Lived It. That podcast is coming right up. First up, let me tell you about a couple of our resource partners. So almost every week of my life for the last 2 years, somebody will ask me about the retreat that changed my life. And I'm so proud to present Spirit Quest as one of our official resource partners. Founded in 2007, it's the holistic wellness center that changed my life, helped me overcome anxiety, helped me work through conflict, gave me all these tools to manage stress, and they would love to do the same thing for you. To connect to Spirit Quest, click the link on our resources tab at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com. And when you get on the phone with them, make sure you mention that you heard it on Learn From People Who Lived It. You've probably heard me say this before, but most of the things that kill us are preventable. And that's exactly why I put my heart in his hands, in his care. I'm talking about Dr. Robert Todd Hurst and Health Span MD. He's my cardiologist because I appreciate his holistic approach to heart health. There's nothing out there like Health Span MD. His AFib reversal program, his CAD reversal program. Get the link on the resources page at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com.
Find Learn From People Who Lived It wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word, Learn From People Who Lived It.
Welcome to another episode of Learn From People Who Lived It.
Oh, let's get it on, man. Let's go. Let's talk about burnout. Let's talk about complacency, and let's do all of it today with my guest, James Schlosser, who is in Washington, D.C., of all frickin' places, man, where my old stomping grounds, on a radio station called Z104. What are you doing there, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm amazing. First up, did I get your name proper? James Schlosser.
So you did, and that's actually really impressive because people will say it wrong 10 different times, but it's, yeah, Schlosser is the correct way to say it. And so you nailed it. You nailed
it. Yes, dude.
You must be a professional or something.
Let's just pack up and go home right now, man. Yeah. We're as good as we're going to get.
We did it.
It's going to be a good chat today, man, because you and I have a lot of common ground with the idea of burnout. And I know you want to spend some time talking about complacency. And for anybody who's checking out this podcast right now, let's know a couple things up front. James is in like the sales lane. And so this podcast today is going to be slightly different. It's going to have a different vibe than some of the other ones that we do here on the show, where we're digging into the first 10 years of people's lives and kind of figuring out how they got their relational programming, what makes them tick, how they, you know, sort of found their way out of it. And we're going to stay a little bit more on task today in that lane of burnout and complacency, because like I said, there's so much common ground, I think, for us to chat about. So here's the question I'm going to ask you, and it's probably going to force you into a little bit of a personal story, but why is this topic important to you?
I mean, this topic's important to me, really, because I spent a number of years trying to figure it out, trying to figure out success, trying to figure out money, and what to do with it, really, you know. And so just to go sort of give you like a quick backstory, I kind of grew up pretty poor. We were under the poverty line. I think in 13 years or in the first 11 years of my life, I moved 13 times. Aside from that, we were living with other people, which is kind of a nice way to say that we didn't have a home for about, you know, with like six different, you know, families that we had, you know, my mom and dad had met in church or whatever. So for me, I had always lived from the standpoint of just like survival. Like, you know, when we eventually moved to Virginia or just outside of DC here, it was like we had a home. It was the first home that we really had owned. And it's essentially where I grew up. But the mechanism inside my brain is just like had been trained of just like life is about like survival. You know, like when my parents told me, like, James, you need to go to college, I was never a book guy, you know. And I have a kind of an interesting story about how my ADHD and my eyes and how my eyes worked actually kind of kept me from reading and understanding books, which we can, you know, may or may not.
I'm like, I have to know about this because I can't comprehend a book to save my life. I've never been able to. And I kind of fear that if this is a thing, I've passed that little gene on to my youngest because he too mm-hmm. has a really hard time comprehending. And it's just like, and I don't know how other to explain it other than like the words just feel harder for me for some reason.
Yeah.
So yeah, like shake that out a little bit. What does that mean?
Yeah. So are you able to do audiobooks?
Oh, I love audiobooks.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. And so you can like pay attention to those. It's chill. Like,
100%.
You're rocking and rolling. Cool. So there's this thing called divergence with the eyes. And so I've been going through this eye therapy program for like 9 months. I meet once a week. I get homework, all this kind of stuff. But essentially what my eyes were doing was if I held my finger out 18 inches from my face, I would see two fingers, right? Like when you are drunk or whatever, or you've been drinking too much, you see double, right? So I'm sober. I can see two fingers. And as I move it in, I cannot make it one finger. So my eyes essentially could not what's called diverge, which is to take two things and look at them together. You can't cross your eyes. And what happens is when I was reading, one eye, like, I mean, both eyes could not look at the same letter. So one eye would read it. The brain would process it as one eye reading it. That eye would go way overstimulated. It would be working way harder than it should. So eventually it would just shut down. It would stop working. And then the brain would switch to the other eye and the other eye would take over. And then the other eye is reading now for 5 to 10 seconds. And then it would go back and forth and back and forth every 5 to 10 seconds. And, you know, you're reading for 5 minutes and you're just exhausted.
I was going to say that sounds fatiguing.
It's incredibly fatiguing, which is why for me, it's like, you know, when I'm trying to read something, it's like I was never able to read for more than like 5 minutes without like looking outside or thinking about something else. And it was really my brain saying like, bro, you need a break. And
yeah.
So I basically just started these exercises and it's just kind of like working out. And I would go into this incredible place here, Virginia Vision Therapy, and just start working on diverging. And when I first went in, the doctor was like, yeah, you can only make your finger one when it's 18 inches in front of you. Any closer, you can't do it. And I got it down to like 6 inches. So if you're thinking about when you're reading a book, it's like, you know, 6 to 10 inches from you. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so your eyes are just switching. They can't make one. But now I can sit down. Matthew, it's so beautiful. I am reading so much. I'm reading to my kids every night. We're doing Little House on the Prairie right now. I'm reading so many books. I'm reading some pretty intense books, too. And I can sit and read for 30 minutes and enjoy it.
So I love even more that we're going to have this conversation because it sounds like you and I are coming from some similar backgrounds where
yes.
you grow up with what people might call a scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
That idea that like you're always going to have to work for your money and you know, you just have to keep grinding, right? And you have to exchange yeah. your time for dollars. And you know, that is a seriously, seriously difficult hurdle to jump. So, I mean, have you made that leap?
So basically what happened was, you know, my parents are like, you need to go to college. And I'm just like, I don't know really what I want to do with my life. And so I just feel this pressure. So I just go to college. And it was, went to community college for 4 semesters on a Pell Grant. And it was like the biggest waste of time of just like, you know, sitting, taking classes I don't care about.
Yeah. But I'm only laughing because I almost have the exact same story, but go ahead.
Yeah. So what happened was, you know, I'm 4 semesters in, I'm only going because it's like, I don't want to end up paycheck to paycheck and super poor, you
right.
know, like I had grown up. And so my parents were just like, we want you to have a better life. And they meant really well. But for me, it's just like, it wasn't going to happen. So the last semester, my dad died. I was 21 years old. And my dad, I was 20 years old. My dad unfortunately passed. And at that point it was just like, well, college isn't going to happen. I just need to work now. And I kind of bounced around eventually, you know, about two years later, I landed in a wood shop for my brother-in-law. He was starting a wood shop, building furniture from reclaimed barn lumber. So
it actually
we would take,
sounds like a really cool gig. I'm not going to lie. I like would love to watch these shows on these Alaskan families who build things
yeah.
from scratch. And it does look like a really exciting
yeah.
gig. Maybe not what you want to do with the rest of your life, but did you enjoy it while you were there?
I enjoyed aspects of it. I really okay. wanted to learn a trade. I just really believed in learning how to work hard. Working yeah. hard was never something I knew growing up. My dad never taught me to work hard. It was my brother-in-law, really starting around the age of 12, who just taught me how to work hard. So I owe so much to him. And Yeah. So I end up working there for like 6-7 years. I don't really know what I want to do with my life. I'm just sort of kind of lost. And then eventually I meet the woman who, you know, is now my wife. And it was very much just like my brother-in-law having a conversation with me being like, okay, you know, I know you're not making a whole lot of money. You know, I've been wanting this to work for you. And you know, I still wanted to, but if it can't, you know, you need to go out and do sales. Like, you're a very outgoing person. I think you'd be really good at sales. And so I eventually just sort of bounced around, and eventually, you know, I think a year or two later, I found myself working for a roofing company, knocking doors to help people get new roofs to their insurance companies. And it's like the money just kind of skyrocketed. And what's really amazing is that I was making all the money is like paying off the credit cards and paying off the, you know, like all the other debt. And, you know, we bought a house and I bought a new truck and this sort of stuff. But it's like the scarcity mindset was completely still in control. Yes. And that just led to when I eventually did have like 6 months of savings and like, check, 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 you know, I'm knocking out all these boxes and all these things that I think I'm supposed to do. And yeah, then it's just like, I have no idea what I want to do with my life and I don't need to work for the next 6 months. Like, what the hell do I do? And that's really where like the soul searching really started, because I couldn't see past that.
Yeah. Golly, man. I mean, you talk about two people meeting each other on a podcast that have some things in common. It's nuts. I mean, for those of you who have spent some time and learned from people who lived it, you know my story. I lose my father at 23. I go to community college for a hot sec. I decide it's not for me. I jump into the radio business. I spend the next 27 years grinding that crap out and enjoyed about 25 of it, and then came to a serious crossroads where it was like, what am I doing with this world I have? And it's so fascinating. I love having this conversation about the scarcity mindset, because you have to trust it. And that's really the only way to put it. You just kind of have to trust that what you're doing is absolutely working. And like horse blinders, you can't even really look around you, because otherwise those old thoughts will creep in, and you know, then what, right? So
yeah,
let's jump on the you want to say something there, and then we'll jump on a complacency a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like the reason we have this scarcity mindset really just comes down, I think, to our past traumas, where it's just like, sure, we just need to get by, right? Like, if we get by, we're doing well. You know, if we look well to others, we're doing well. If we're getting by and we're making a paycheck to paycheck and we're doing what we think we should be doing or what others are expecting of us, we're doing okay. And I think that's where we get really, really stuck, you know, and we don't want to rock these boats too much or go out and try something where people might say, oh, like, what, like, why are you doing that? Like, right, you sure you want to be doing that? Like, sure, that's a good idea. And that can be debilitating to some people. So I feel like that's where people just get stuck in a total rut.
So true. And then complacency, the word that, you know, you love to go and do speeches on. Now, I'm guessing a couple other things that we have in common are, do you go out and do speeches and do like help salespeople and do team builds and things like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I'm sure you talk a lot about complacency, and I love that you use that word rut, right? Like, I've drilled down on tons of psychologists and psychiatrists and healers and all these people to kind of define that. And from what I gather, it's a feeling that's a little uncomfortable for longer than 3 weeks. Like, most of us can, you know, take it for a hot sec and we can last for a couple of weeks. But if it's going on 3 weeks and you just cannot let go of whatever's going on, there's a chance you're starting to slide into a rut. And, you know, the only way out of it is to move, like, get your butt in gear and start doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know that you mentioned to me up front that you do door-to-door sales. What's so crazy about this is that, okay, so we recorded this podcast at 2:30 PST today. At 2:28, my Ring doorbell goes, and it's a woman out there who's selling windows and doors, and she's looking for two promotional homes that she can put her signs up in and do the whole thing. And I was like, this is nuts that this is the guy that I'm talking to now who does this, because I love these people. I really do. I give them my time. I listen to their speech. Yeah. I see what they got going on. It takes me back to when I had to sell candy bars door to door to pay for my hockey, That's seasons, crazy. Right? I loved
That's
it.
That's awesome.
I loved going door to door and doing that whole thing. And the other thing that I think is worth mentioning really quick before we get too far into complacency is something that's true, I think, for both of us, which is because of the way we came up, it does make us better in those sales situations. We're a little better at adapting. We're a little better at reading the situation and knowing kind of like what needs to happen. And so if you had a little bit of a bumpy ride on the way up, there's a really good chance that that's put you in a pretty good position to be in a sales role because you're going to be better at ebbing and flowing and adapting and some of those things. So when you go out and do your chats, man, with folks in your workshops, how does complacency come into your program? When do you start talking about it and why?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're really talking about, pitching or what's the problem? Like, you really need to position yourself from the standpoint of like, I'm going to solve a problem. And I think complacency is one of those where it's just like people sort of hit like a certain point, and then it's like they just don't care. And it's not so much like complacency in sales. It's just like complacency in life. Like, for me, complacency is what led me to burnout. And I think people can kind of define burnout as a lot of different things. But for me, it just was like, I didn't have a why anymore. Mm-hmm. And then we got hit with just like some major difficulties, major financial difficulties, which put strain, on every aspect of my life and my wife's life. And that's where it's just like, I had all the money and then it's like we lost it. And then at that point it was, kind of really having to figure out like, why am I here? Like, why am I actually here? And that's when the scarcity mindset thing came in because, what should have been like this, you're building something really good. Life can get better. I never really believed that life could get better. I was like, this is as good as it gets. This is amazing. And I don't trust it enough that it could get better, or that I'm even worth life getting better for, which is probably like the way deeper lie that I was believing, but have no idea how to articulate that. Right. Again, because it's just buried by, trauma in your childhood and all this other kind of stuff. And so it really, when I'm sitting in, the December of 2021, and I'm unable to pay my mortgage the following month. It was so hard to go to my boss and be like, I need a month's worth of rent. And that's when I was just realizing like, I need to start working really hard. I'm good at my job. I'm a top sales leader in my company, right? Like I'm going into the roofing industry and I'm able to close down $1.5 million a year. I'm doing well. And I wanted to continue to do well, but I had to come at it from the standpoint of like, I'm going to do this, but I need to create a set of values so that I don't end up back here. So I don't end up at burnout. So I don't end up at complacency. I have to come up with a new why, define my values. What are the things that are most important to me? Kill it in sales, but then put boundaries on that as well. And there's so many people that are just like, yeah, just go all the way and do the thing, and just go like 100%. And I'm just like, I like the idea of going 100%, but the problem with going 100% is that there's going to be fallout somewhere because your life isn't all work and you can't just work. And I think people and, sales professionals are slowly starting to come around to this idea of like, wow, it's great when you're young and single, but when you're married with kids, like you can't go 100%. And so what I did was I essentially was just like, okay, I'm going to work and I'm going to kill it during these specific hours. And when I'm not working, I'm going to focus on the things that matter most to me, whether that be, my church, my community, my wife, my children, my extended family, my friends, all these things. And when I did that, it was unbelievable. I came more alive. Cause I'm like, I'm living a much more fuller life so that when I came into work, now I'm killing it. And the crazy thing is with door to door, it's all about the conversion rates, right? So I should be able to get a gig every 30 doors that I sign. Well, eventually the more that I'm becoming just more fulfilled as myself, as a man, more confident, that ratio is dropping. So I'm essentially making more money in less time and I'm spending more time on what matters to me the most. And like, that's the thing that I want to teach every single human being on that they need to focus on that. They need to focus on actually what's most important to them.
So let's break that down a ton. Yeah, love where you're going on this, man, because again, there's a lot of similar threads between what you and I are putting out there. So, okay, want to do two things. Number one, I want to define complacency as you see it, okay? Because that's one of those words that we hear, but potentially you can give us, either your own story or examples that you use when you present. What does complacency actually look like in somebody's life?
Yeah, so complacency looks like just being in a place where you're too comfortable, where you're just like, hey, I'm good. I could go out and do this. You know, I said I was going to go out and work, but I actually don't have to, you know, because I'm good, because I have the rent or more, whatever paid for the next however many months. I don't actually need to go out there and make money right now. So, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to chill. I'm not going to do anything. It was just really just like, you know, you're just kind of a sitting duck.
Yeah. Interesting. And for me, complacency started to look like, I think I got bored, and then I started buying crap that I didn't need because I had the money finally to do it. And, you know, I mean, like, that's how it goes for a lot of people. And then picking up on something you said earlier, you know, listen, yeah, well, you're young and you're single, bro, slay it. Go as hard as you want to go, but just know that that won't be a pace, because this thing's a marathon, and that only works till it doesn't. And then oftentimes when it doesn't, it's not pretty, right? Like, that's the thing. It's not pretty. And thank God for, you know, what Michael Singer is, you know, these midlife crises. He says every one of us should have to have one. We should all have to wake up and figure out, okay, is this exactly where I want to be headed? Because there's a lot of value in folks like you and I having those moments, waking up, and then helping other people try to achieve them. Okay, here's part two. So, essentially, when you're talking about values, you're talking about, you know, what's important to you. And then so oftentimes to live that out, you will need to create boundaries. So how do you propose we assist somebody in creating a boundary?
Yeah.
I mean, I love your time compartmentalized idea. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think time blocking is a really big aspect of it, but I think it just comes down to a lot of times in the way that I've seen it. And I think a lot of people deal with this as well, where it's like, we're out there, we're working, we're hustling, which is great. I'm not saying don't work. Like, I believe in having a really good work ethic. And I think there's a huge place for young people to just know, like, build a good work ethic, go out there and work hard. Like, we need people who are working hard. But then, you know, like, I think we need to create boundaries. One, the most obvious, I think, is just with our phones. So it's like when we go home and it's like, this is the time with our kids, this is, you know, or date night or something like that, just put this stupid thing away. You don't need it. Like, there's nothing so important, you know, in your life that you need to have your phone on you, and it needs to distract you actually from what matters most, which is just like, you know, people want to be a rock solid dad and a rock solid husband. And we should want those things, right? I literally believe that the fabrics of society start with a family, start with being a good dad, being a good husband. 100%. And so I would say, number one, learn to put work away, right? And again, it's a good boundary to set, but it's a hard boundary to set, because especially in sales, man, it's dopamine driven. Right.
Sure it is.
So it's hard to turn off that dopamine and then go home, or it's just like you're not slaying it at home. Right. Or it's like your wife might be upset with you. And it's like, you don't get dopamine hits when your wife's telling you to pick up your clothes, you know, off the bedroom floor.
Yeah. Me neither. Something else we have in common.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, so that's kind of how I would go about like setting boundaries, just like, what's your value? And then when you're really investing into those things that matter most to you, what's distracting you, then cut those things out, spend intentional time around it.
So we put down the phone, we get more intentional with our family, we put the crap away that our wives ask us to put away. We really get intentional about our time. When you time block, can you give us an example of what your day looks like? Because some people are so literal, man. They're like, well, what does James do? I want to do that.
Yeah. So I'll just start with my value system. So so it would go God, and then my wife, and then my children, and then my work. So those are the things that, for me, like, the order of importance. Like, work is not number one. So I would just wake up every day and I pray. And I spend usually between 30 minutes to an hour. And it's just like, I just really try to put myself in a state of prayer. And then I check in with the wife. I make sure that, you know, she's getting set up to have a, you know, successful day. What does she have going on? How can I help? So I get the, you know, kids dressed, make breakfast. It could look like all that kind of stuff, you know, really just sort of help her. And then just make sure to ask like, hey, what can I do to sort of help your day be successful? Like, what do you need a hand with? You know, like this morning it was the leaves needed to get, you know, picked up. And so I was like, okay, I took an extra half an hour. I got the time, you know, like I'll do it. And that meant a lot. And then after that, once those things are sort of like checked off, then it's like, okay, great. Like whatever you have, you know, whether it's, you know, creating some content or knocking some doors, or preparing for a gig or something like that, that at that point, it's like, okay, you deal with that. And then at the end of the day, for me, you know, I have a really strong boundary of just, I'm just going to be home for dinner every day. So, you know, when it hits 5:30, 6 o'clock, it's like, I'm done, I'm out. So, and then it's like, you know, phone down, and then it's just take care of the kids until, you know, the house is ordered and, you know, everybody is in bed, and then I can take some time to myself and some time with my wife.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a good setup. And what's important is that there's like a D time for you, right? Like there's an absolute end of the day where you don't pick it up anymore because, you know, folks like me and millions of others are working at home or from home pretty much 100% of the time. And it's so easy to be blurry with it all. And, you know, just, so, I'm just going to jump in the office.
Yeah. So what do you do to remedy that? Or how do you create boundaries being like, you know, working from home and just things can just really kind of mold together?
Yeah. For me, I am a little bit structured in the same way you are, where my mornings will either start with going to the gym, or I'm also a hockey coach for a high school team. And so we have early morning practices. So I'm either at the rink or I'm at the gym to start my day, come home. I walk my dog, you know, get my son, and like Huberman says, right? Like walk into the sun for 10 minutes.
Right.
So I'm walking into the sun for 10 minutes, and I'm trying to let it all sink in.
Yeah.
And then I really just kind of, man, I'm in a totally different headspace than I used to be. I used to grind so hard. Yeah. I mean, so hard. I used to have this sign in my studio that said, "Be more number one." What the heck?
Right.
Like, you can't be more. It's like people that say, give me 110%. I can't.
Yeah.
100's the best I can do on my best day. It's just not how this is going to work.
Yeah.
But anyways, you go so freaking hard. And I did morning shows. Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah. You're up early.
Right. And I woke up and I gave my morning to other people right away. And it wasn't until maybe the last 8 years of my morning show career where I purposefully worked in a meditation before the show started every single day. Mm-hmm. But for many years, I did not do that. And one of the cool things about your story is, and I always say to people, like, don't get tripped up on words, like get up in the morning and do something that connects you to something bigger than yourself. And if that's breath work or prayer or meditation, like, I don't care. And don't get hung up on the words. Just go do something for yourself. And so that's a really beautiful way to start the day. And I think you would agree with that. It's a really nice thing to do for yourself, is to wake up and give the morning to yourself and to God, if you like. And then the other thing that so many people do is they sleep right next to, I was looking for my phone, they sleep right next to these things.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do in the morning is they give it to somebody else. They look up and they see an email. They look up and they get a TikTok or Instagram reel post or something like that. And it's like, you guys, just stop. Give yourself an hour that's just for you in the morning. Yeah. And if that means waking up 30 minutes early, then that is what it means. But if you want to hold on to values and do what you say what you're going to do and do what you're going to say, then just go make that the promise you keep for yourself, because man, it is the difference between really, there's so much peace in your house, I'll bet, James, because of the way that you start your day. And what an easy thing that you do. You just wake up a little early. you go get with yourself and God, and you have a conversation, you settle your brain down, you get intentional mm-hmm. with your kids and your wife, and you're just trying to be helpful in the morning. I mean, there's probably not a woman listening that wouldn't freaking love that kind of assistance in the morning. And I'll bet that just blossoms in your relationship with your wife, right?
I think it's really helpful, you know, for sure. Like, just to know, it's like, okay, you just kind of come back like, okay, like we're a team. And it's not like every morning is like that. It's not sure. Like I have like this perfect marriage. I'm 6 years into it. So I'm
don't blow my dream, man. My dream is that it's all perfect there.
It's amazing.
In DC.
We never fight. It's never. Just, I mean, it's just the best thing ever.
Nonstop romance. The kids go to sleep at 7:30. It's incredible. Oh,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Spend 6 hours together every single night. It's just phenomenal.
I want your life.
But yeah. But I mean, look, like the reality too, and you know, just to riff on marriage a little bit, it's just like, look, it's really hard. It's really hard. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to, my wife and I keep coming back to, is just like, we're just really trying to work together, really trying to be a team. You know, neither of us have it figured out. We're both broken, but we're both really trying to meet the other person where they're at, and just trying to be just really, really humble and listen and really work together. And I feel like when you do that, it really, really helps, you know, and you can just move forward. Just again, it's not like marriage isn't a sprint. It's a marathon. You know, you're figuring it out one day at a time, one step at a time. But I know at the end of the day, I love my wife. My wife loves me. And it can get, you know, as difficult as it can get, I know it's just like, I know I'm in it and I know she's in it. And I'll tell you what, like that gives you a sense of confidence and just rock solid trust of just like we're doing this. You know,
when you do, can I ask you a question? When you do your workshops for folks, do you help them come up with their values? Do you help them sort of, do you force them and prompt them to sit down and think about what those things are?
Absolutely. So the way that I really like helping people,
put me in the workshop right now.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Workshop right now. Let's
okay.
Go.
Awesome. Okay. So let's just say, all right, Matthew. So,
I got to get some paper, right?
Get some paper, get ready to take some notes. Okay. You know, wherever you're at in life right now, let's say that you have 2 weeks to live.
Okay.
That's it. So you've got 2 weeks to live. The doctors say whatever you got is incurable. You got 2 weeks to live, right? What are you going to do?
Damn,
with your
time? Workshop is morbid.
Well, no, I mean, seriously.
I'm just kidding, man.
But I mean, what I love about it is that we're not guaranteed tomorrow. We're not guaranteed the rest of today. So if we're not thinking about the things that matter most to us in life, it's just like, you know, like, what are you doing? Like you may not make it till tomorrow. So I'm just going to say you got 2 weeks left to live.
Okay.
You know, what are you going to do with yourself? What actually matters most to you? You know?
Okay, so I need to write these things down, correct?
Yeah. I would say like write them down. Like, and there should be an order to it. Right. And this is something that I think people really need to think about, right? Like, for instance, if you had 2 weeks, you know, left to live, like, would you finally call your mom? Tell her you love her, you know, would you finally, you know, like really, really sit down and try to connect with your children? Because you don't know how long you're going to be here for. And so as you're asking yourself, like, you know, what would I do if I had 2 weeks left to live? Those are the things that you need to focus on. Those are the things that you need to invest in, and you need to invest into those now because they matter, because they're the makeup of who you are.
Okay. Okay. So I wrote a few things down. So what's my next prompt?
Okay. So your next prompt is, the number one value that you have is the number one thing that you should be investing into every single morning. The number one value is the number one thing you should be investing to every single morning.
So the first thing that I wrote down in my 2 weeks to live, that's the thing I should invest in every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So I would wake up in the morning and I would center yourself on that.
All right.
And then I would just go down the list, you know, and then, the other thing too, that I would say is you should close your days with those things as well. When you go to sleep, you know, so for me, it really goes to, you know, wake up, God, family, and then work. And then when I come home from work, it's family, put the kids down, and then I pray in the evening as well. And then I go to sleep.
Interesting. What do other people, what, like, as you, I'm sure you call for volunteers sometimes. So what do some people say? What shows up on other people's 2 weeks to live list?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot of the same things, you know, for single people, it might look a little bit different, but I think at the end of the day, we all have this yearning in our heart to, like, you know, like, you know, we get married. I think we all want to have good marriages, but we don't quite know how to work on those, or you don't quite know how to have it. I think there's a lot of, unformed people. And so I think it just leads a lot of people just to realize, like, oh my gosh, maybe I should take my wife out on a date, you know, like maybe I should knock a few less doors and, you know, maybe work on something on the house or do something that my wife likes to do, you know, or do something that my wife would like me to do. Like, I just had this experience where, oh my gosh, like talking about less is more. I'm running around, I'm doing like all the billion things for work, and I'm super stressed out. And I just had to ground myself in gratitude and just be like, I already have it all. I have everything that I could ever want. And as I'm slowing, I've just sort of like, just sort of cleared my plate. And I was just like, okay, what are the values? This just, you know, don't try to do a million things, James. Try to do like a couple things really well. And I just sort of found myself just ask myself, like, man, what would be something that my wife would like that I could do that would just make her really happy? And I just sort of meditated on that a little bit. And I came up with just two little projects that I was able to get done, and I got them done. And she was like super happy. She's like, wow, this is so awesome. Like, you did it, you know, like I've been asking you for months and you finally did it. And it's like, okay, awesome. Like that to me is huge. And I definitely see that a lot.
Cool. All right. So what's next in the workshop? So after I've got my values and I know these are the things I need to attack, is there a strategy you offer up on kind of how to?
Yeah. I mean, really, I think it's just the time blocking, you know, it's just being able to go through and stick it in your calendar, because there has to be accountability, because if we're not putting it somewhere, we're not writing it down somewhere, or we're not telling somebody, it's going to be really hard to stay accountable to that. And so what I say really is just like put out your calendars and time block these things. Okay. You know, like I'm going to do, you know, number one value from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. or 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., whatever it is, every single morning, it's in the calendar. You wake up when your alarm says to wake up and you're doing that thing, you know? And for some people, it could look like, you know, prayer and then fitness. Like fitness is like a huge thing, right, which is great. That's awesome. So it's like awesome that you just have to make sure that you're really consistent with that. You know, like you're not going to, it's not this problem to solve, it's this journey to take. You know, like with fitness, it's not one of those things like I'm gonna go to the gym super hard for 30 days and then I'll be fit. It's like, well, yeah, maybe, but you might pull a bunch of muscles too. It's like, why don't you just go in and just be really, really consistent with it, you know, over the course of like 5 to 6 months, and then you'll see results. But it's like I said, it's a marathon.
I'm the proof, James. Just got back in the gym like 6 months, and you know, I just was yucked, man. Because that's the thing about, you know, it's when you work so hard and you've got a family and you've got kids, like as parents, we just make so many concessions with ourselves, and we get to a point where we like stop taking care of ourselves, and some people almost completely, right? The world is just filled with these parents who have, oh man, I mean, whether it's circumstance, environment, or a combination of the both, right? Like they don't feel like they have any time for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think what they haven't tuned into is what you and I have just spent the last 37 minutes talking about. They've forgotten about their values. They've forgotten about what's important to them. And so they feel a little bit lost and they don't really know what to do. And so I think you have to, I know, as somebody who lived this, like I was talking to somebody yesterday, it's a perfect quote to kind of wrap this up. She texted me and she's like, you know, if you want your life to change, you have to change your life. And I was like, that's it.
That's great.
It's like, if you're burned out, if you're in a rut, if you're complacent, if your life doesn't make sense and you want something different, if you want your life to change, you have to change your life.
Yeah.
Figure out what it is and start interjecting that crap like today. Go start tonight.
Yeah. And right? Yeah, absolutely. And even to riff on that, just on giving yourself time, I think the people we have the least amount of mercy on is ourselves.
Yeah.
Amen. You know, we need time to ourselves. And I'll tell you right that, like right now, like if you're married, I believe that you actually have a responsibility to help your spouse get time to themselves. Right.
Yes.
So if you come home and you've had a rough day, but your wife's been dealing with kids all day or has been dealing with bills all day or whatever she's been dealing with, and she's exhausted too, get to a point and just be like, hey, can I take the kids outside for 30 minutes and you just drink a glass of wine or you go do something that kind of resets you, you know? Because she needs that too. And I think like that's what builds like the friendship, right? Mm-hmm. When she realizes like, oh wow, like he sees that. And I don't even have to ask for it. He's going to come to me and you'll be able to see that. Like when you can see that and then go and approach it, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's like, I'd love to crack a beer and watch a game. And I'm going to go instead and just be like, hey, can I just take the kids outside for a little bit? And you just sort of like reset, or can I grab dinner tonight? You know, like you have a responsibility to help your spouse reset themselves as well.
Yeah. This is it, man. I love it. Dude, what a great visit. And I'm so grateful we've linked up and found each other and we're able to put this podcast together. So what's the holidays look like for James?
I mean, it's going to be super chill. I think we're just going to spend a lot of time at the house together. Yeah. My family's local. And so it's just going to be great. You know, I think we might do a little bit of travel. Go check out, you know, Christmas lights. Obviously in DC, it's great. Georgetown is just baller at Christmas time. And so my wife really likes doing that. And then I just hang out and spend time together and just do these traditions. What's great about I have a young family. And so it's great is like, you get to have your own traditions and start your own Christmas traditions and really invite your children into the season the way that you want to. And so my wife and I, it's just so beautiful. We're just sort of like taking traditions that she had growing up and taking traditions I had growing up and just kind of trying to fuse those together. And like, what was special about Christmas to both of us? And that's going to be the experience that our children have. And it's awesome, man.
Love it, dude. That's so great. Well, listen, if you ever need a legit spot for date night, I'm going to suggest that I'm going to send you to go see my good buddy at the Peacock Cafe in Georgetown. You mentioned Georgetown a second ago. It's right on Prospect Avenue, right off Wisconsin there, just as you cross the Key Bridge. Sweet. And it is an unbelievable restaurant. The food is so good. And the gentleman who owns the place is even better. And I'm told that sometimes mentioning my name will get you a free dessert.
Well, then I will have to 100% remember that. I'll remember that. So, but
this is just what I hear.
Yeah. So, but how about you? Like, as far as Christmas traditions go, like, how did you and your wife kind of take that journey in discovering or just creating your own traditions?
We did the insanity thing, bro. We were running through the airport with two strollers and five suitcases and two toddlers, and we were traveling to Chicago and Minnesota and all over creation. And then we finally moved here to Phoenix in 2010. And that was it. We were absolutely done. It was like, well, hold on a second. It's so funny, dude. We just had a podcast a couple of weeks ago with this duo, Brad and Jen, and we were talking about how parents, like our parents, they mess it all up because they insist that we stay with their traditions and we keep doing their things. And that's fine if that works for you and your family, like then no big deal. But I know more and more people that have kids and they feel real pressure to have to do like grandma, grandpa's traditions. And they really genuinely want to start their own thing. And they've got these little kids and, you know, they want to do that. Man, that's tough. So anyways, for us, we're here, man. We're chill. We've got the four of us, our in-laws live close. If anybody from, you know, up north wants to come visit, they're welcome to.
There you go.
But we have a lot of hockey we play that week too. So, it kind of keeps us right here and super chill. We'll probably go up to Flagstaff, which is a couple hours north here in Arizona, and ski. So that's it, man. We're super low key around Christmas time, and both my boys are, we're 17 and 15 now. And what's interesting is they're starting to desire experience more than things. And so Christmas has gone from like a tree with 1,000 presents underneath it to like 4 things, but they're all awesome adventures waiting us.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that. My wife, literally, this is so funny. You and I have so much in common. I feel like I'm just a few years behind you here. But my wife just sent me something basically like, you know, instead of presents, you know, buy experiences. And I really, really like that because you can get all the things, but then it's like now your house is just messier and you have like, you know, more crap to clean up. It's like what if you got an experience instead and you did a trip and you're able to create more core memories together? Like that's a pretty cool Christmas present.
It's way better, man. Doesn't require the last minute battery run. There's nothing to put together. There's nothing to clean up, bro. You just go somewhere and have an adventure.
Oh, that's so, I love it, man. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, tear it up. Steal it. Yeah. Everybody else steal it too. All right, James, listen, we're going to let you run and enjoy the rest of your day. Continued success with everything you're doing. If I can ever an ally for you, man, please reach out and let me know. Any last words from you? Any last things you want to mic drop on somebody?
You don't have to have it all to be happy. I think the thing that I've been really reflecting on is just I'm trying to do everything or I'm trying to appease everybody. And for me, it brought a lot of anxiety. And I was just like, I wasn't getting anything done because I was trying to do so much and had so much stuff crowding in my head. When I just sort of took a step back and I just stopped. I just completely stopped. And then I just slowly started to implement things. Again, according to values and according to, you know, importance and with work is like what needs to get done that's really important. I felt like I was doing less, but I was actually accomplishing more and more things were just kind of working together. You know, like when it comes to getting, you know, like talking to prospects about, you know, like speaking at like the next association or the next conference or whatever, you think to yourself like, oh, let me try to drum up 200 leads. And it's like, that's a lot of leads. Like instead of, you know, focusing on 200 leads, focus on like 20 or 30, but like really focus on them, be really intentional with them and really try to connect with them. You'll find that you'll actually probably get more done in less time.
Everybody say it with me. Less is more.
Yeah.
That's it. End of discussion. Bro. Yeah. James, thank you, brother. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
We have 3 goals with Learn From People Who Lived It. 1, to help you feel less alone. 2, encourage you to seek out a coach, a therapist, a church, anyone who can help you get through your journey and find some healing. 3, when you're ready, share your story with us.
Find Learn From People Who Lived It, wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word. Learn from people who lived it.
At Mental Joe, they sell more than shirts. They sell apparel with a purpose. In fact, my favorite hoodie in my closet is a Mental Joe hoodie. They help out G.I. Joes to the average Joe's 1 t-shirt at a time. With every purchase, you help them support organizations that can provide services to help others get out of their heads and into their bodies through plant medicines, equine therapy, yoga, and other non-traditional mental health treatments. Link to them. Pick out your favorite t-shirt or hoodie right now at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com/resources.